Mookie Betts is moving back to the infield for 2025. Does this mean the Dodgers are signing Juan Soto? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, November 7th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, a lot of stuff going on across Major League Baseball as far as no big signings, right? But a lot of at the GM meetings, a lot of news coming out about what teams want to do, what players want to do. And I want to start off with Mookie Betts coming off of a World Series win. I believe it's either his second or his third. We're in a situation where the Dodgers announced that he would be moving back to the infield. They had moved him to second base some down the stretch in 23. He started the season in 24 as the shortstop, played shortstop and second base. They reinforced the position at the trade deadline and moved him back to the outfield. Now he's moving back into second base. I think we're kind of in agreement that relieving the physical load of playing the outfield is probably a good thing as he gets a little bit older. But are you surprised that he's moving back to the infield again? And do you think this is so that they can sign Juan Soto?
Yeah, it was his third World Series, by the way. He is the only active player with three World Series championships right now.
Really?
Yep. Could be Freddie Freeman here soon. Could be the next active player with three World Series championships. But
Altuve had won three with the Astros. Okay, I guess not. Two. All right, only two.
They are 2-2 in their World Series trips.
There you go. Okay.
But Mookie.
Didn't they beat your Phillies, but lose to my Braves? That's what happened. That's right. That's why off on the number of wins. Sorry.
I've slept a time or two since then. I'm not quite sure, but
anyway.
But yeah, no. Moving Mookie Betts back to the infield, like you said, I agree. It is going to work wonders for him. He's not going to be running as much as he does when he's in the outfield. Now, defensively, he isn't as good in the infield as he is in the outfield, but really with what he provides at the plate, you can take that hit defensively, especially at a position like second base. You don't necessarily have to have the best defender on the team playing second base, but it is possibly quite telling of how hard they are going to be going after Juan Soto here in free agency, mm-hmm. because Mookie Betts plays right field. Juan Soto generally plays right field. So
he can't DH in LA.
Right. Yeah, no, that's Shohei's position. And so moving Mookie back to second, they're probably going pretty hard after Juan Soto, a lot harder than we originally intended them to.
Yeah, and kind of looking at some of the stats here since he got to L.A., since Mookie got to L.A., he was a plus defender in right field in 2020 and in 2022. And this year, and despite not much time in right, plus one in right, he was a negative defender at short every time, and he's never been above zero at second base. Now, he's never been worse than minus one outs above average, but he's never been above average either. So at best, he is neutral at second. But again, like you said, the offense is the big thing here. You're not asking him to be a gold glover. You're finding a place to put him so that he can just continue to rake from the top of the lineup. That's what you're doing. And it is interesting that you see some organizations going different ways on this, right? You saw the Dodgers discuss moving him into second base to the explicit reason was to lessen the physical toll and load on him. And then the Yankees turned around and moved Aaron Judge from right to center field. And I think you saw their defense wasn't necessarily that great. They struggled defensively this season. You kind of have to wonder about what's going to happen going forward for the Yankees. And I think some of that depends on Juan Soto as well, but yeah, the Dodgers are in an interesting situation right now, as far as the outfield with this move, because it feels obvious they have to make some sort of acquisition. Their starting outfield as of right now would be Tommy Edman in center, if he's not playing short, right? If like Fangraphs has Mookie at short, Tommy Edman in center, with Andy Pahes and James Outman at the corners. And if Edman has to play short, that means Andy Pahes is your center fielder, because this is not a good free agency class for center fielders.
Right.
And then you have James Outman and probably Chris Taylor as your outfielders, and that feels even worse. And so it seems obvious they're going to make an acquisition for the outfield. The question's going to be, is it going to be Juan Soto or not? Because everything that we know about the Juan Soto pursuit, they want to beat Shohei's annual average value from the present day value, the $43.7 million that the MLBPA says the deal is worth per year when you adjust for the fact there's no interest on the deferrals. And they don't want a lot of deferred money. And that's obviously a thing LA loves to do. Even Teoscar Hernandez's deal last year, they deferred a big portion of that on a one-year deal. So it feels like the Dodgers aren't going to make this signing simply because reportedly they don't want the deferrals. But if they do, I feel like we have to ask, if you add Juan Soto to this lineup, is this the greatest offense in baseball?
I would absolutely say yes. Possibly the greatest offense in the history of baseball, not just right now, with Juan Soto, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani. The list goes on. Will Smith. It's crazy what they already have. And if they add Juan Soto to that mix, that lineup just gets that much deeper.
Yeah. I mean, it's, at a certain point, if the Dodgers are able to pull off a signing for Juan Soto, you have to imagine there's going to be clamoring to change when the CBA negotiations come around, to do something to try and build a little parity in there. Because it feels like if the Dodgers are able to sign three of the top free agents from last offseason and this offseason, in Yamamoto, Ohtani, and Soto, you're going to have questions about parity, right? You're going to have questions about how can the Pirates keep up with this? How can the Reds compete with this? How can the Brewers compete with this? And I don't really know, other than a hard cap, what you could do, because I've made this point on the show before. A lot of these teams are owned by billionaires. They can do this if they want to.
Yep.
There's no reason that 25 teams couldn't be in on Juan Soto. Now, are they willing to make the commitment to sign him? No. Can they find $44 million a year to pay the salary of Juan Soto? Yes. And so if the Dodgers get him, it's going to be frustrating for everybody. They're going to be the World Series favorite for the next 5 years, every single year.
At least.
Yeah. But it's also going to be nobody's fault but your own if your team doesn't sign them, for the most part, because every team almost every team can make that signing if they want to and are just choosing not to. A team that's kind of been rumored to be going after both Juan Soto and another big bat is the New York Mets. John Heyman, MLB Network insider, reported on Wednesday that the Mets believe they can sign both Soto and Pete Alonso and a notable starting pitcher. So Soto out in right field, Pete Alonso coming back to first, and then one of the starting pitchers, maybe it's Sean Manaea, who they gave a qualifying offer to. Maybe it's Luis Severino. We expect Manaea to decline it. I think Severino should take it. But either way, is this something where, do you see that as likely, or is this something where their pursuit of Pete Alonso probably depends on whether or not they get Juan Soto?
I think it's more the second one. If they do try to sign Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, and a starting pitcher, then they're going to have to start doing the deferral thing like the Dodgers are doing. I know that they have no propensity against spending money, especially with Steve Cohen willing to flip the bill, but at some point, even for Steve Cohen, too much becomes too much. And if they did sign those two guys and a starting pitcher, they would 100% be across the fourth threshold of the luxury tax. And that's just insane to think about. And even if they do sign Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, and one of the starting pitchers, they still might not have enough to compete for the World Series, much less even the National League East.
Yeah, looking at the Mets roster as of right now, I do think you have a lot of questions about your rotation. You have a lot of questions about your position player depth. I mean, this is something, your rotation as of right now, guys who are already signed, you have team control over, arbitration, whatever. Kodai Senga, David Peterson's your number two. Paul Blackburn, Tyler McGill, Jose Buttow. Not bad, but not a postseason caliber rotation, right?
Absolutely.
And then you look at your lineup, and I think right now, without Alonso, Mark Vientos is at first base. You're asking Brett Beatty to make it work at third. You have Luis Angel Acuña getting everyday playing time at second while Lindor's at short. You know, I guess Jeff McNeil's your DH, maybe. I don't know. But like your bench, Luis Torrens, Luis De Los Santos, Luke Ritter, Jose Azucar, it's not very inspiring. So it's obvious they're going to make moves. I think the question is, can they get Soto and still get the help they need in the rotation and the position player group? And I feel like, I think similar to you, I don't think they can get Soto and then fill every other need with a marquee free agent, right? You're going to have to cheap out somewhere.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's probably easier to fill out first base with a value signing or an internal option than it is to fill out your rotation that way, because you need so many capable starters. You need so many depth pieces, and then postseason guys in your rotation that you're, I don't see, even with Cohen's money, how they can do all of it. It feels like something has to give. And I feel like first base is probably what ends up having to give if they sign Juan Soto.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like Cohen is kind of going after this more with a NFL mindset, where a team can go out and get a guy like Patrick Mahomes and they're a Super Bowl contender instantly, regardless right. of who else is on the team.
He elevates the whole rest of the roster, right?
Right. And baseball is a completely different animal. You have to have, I think that somebody said one time that, especially in the postseason, you have to have three hot hitters, three hot pitchers, and three hot relievers. I've heard that a time or two, but with the way their roster is constructed right now, even with the addition of those guys, they would not have those, and right. it's not going to work out.
Yeah, I can absolutely see how that's it feels like they have too many holes to fill with the top of the market on everything, right? Yep. A team that does have some holes and is looking to fill them, and one notable one, the San Francisco Giants, under Buster Posey now, new management coming in, they talked at the GM meetings this week that they want to find a shortstop, right? They think Tyler Fitzgerald, who graded out below average defensively at short, they think that he's valuable at multiple spots. They really like, they want to figure out if it's a long-term at second base thing, if his value is a utility man who can play a lot of different places. And ever since Brandon Crawford left, they struggled. Marco Luciano, one of their top prospects, got the job last year, was going to be given the job, lost it in spring training to Nick Ahmed because of defensive issues. Ahmed couldn't hit and was DFA'd. Fitzgerald took it, but 72 games, 11 errors, minus four outs above average. And Luciano struggled so much at second that they're moving him to the outfield now. And everybody's kind of penciled in Willy Adames here, because Adames is repped by CAA, who Posey used to work with back when Posey was a player. And the fact that the Giants have tried to sign a top free agent for years now. They tried to get Bryce Harper.
Judge.
I couldn't think of his name. They tried to get Bryce Harper. They tried to get Arson Judge. They tried to get Carlos Correa. They've tried and failed to get a top free agent so many times. But I think that Ha-Seong Kim has a chance of being the guy instead, because he played with center fielder Hyung-Woo Lee in Korea. He played with manager Bob Melvin in San Diego. He doesn't have a qualifying offer. San Francisco signed two qualifying offer guys last year and lost multiple picks. And so I legitimately feel like Ha-Seong Kim could be the guy over Willy Adames.
Yeah, no, Christian and I kind of touched on this a little bit yesterday also, that it would be cool to see the Giants go hard after Adames, just to kind of throw a wrench in one of the Dodgers' plans of how bad they've wanted him so lately. Mm-hmm. But realistically, I agree with you. Kim is probably the more likely option to go there just for those reasons. And Adames is not going to put them over the top for contention, and Kim won't either, but they need, like, kind of in the same situation as the Mets, they have more holes to fill than just the just shortstop, and going for Kim, who would be a cheaper option and not all that far off in production, would allow them more space in their payroll to fill more holes.
Yeah, like if you're able to sign Kim and you move Fitzgerald to second, I think that gives you the ability. You now no longer have to play Casey Schmidt every day, and you can now have the money to upgrade your outfield. Because right now your outfield is Younghoe Lee in center, and then some combination of Mike Yastrzemski, prospect Grant McRae being given a starting job. I don't think he's even debuted in the majors yet. And then Hilliard Ramos is, I guess, your DH right now. But it gives you the ability to go out and get somebody. It needs to be a non-qualifying offer guy. It's not going to be an Anthony Santander or something like that. But it gives you the ability, maybe you sign Teoscar Hernandez, maybe you sign some sort of corner slugger to give you power that you haven't really had and that you obviously were trying to get. You signed Jorge Soler trying to find power. I feel like Kim and then being able to add to either the lineup or the rotation. Logan Webb, Robbie Ray, Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison's not a bad 1-4, but Hicks has workload concerns. Ray has workload concerns coming back from Tommy John. Harrison still young with injury and workload concerns. Landon Raup, I guess, is your fifth starter right now, but it gives you flexibility to go and say, hey, we're going to add a starter to this. We're going to add a corner outfielder. Whereas if you sign send Adames to that big deal, you're probably only able to upgrade one of those two remaining spots. And it just feels like, as much as it's harder to sign a Boris client, one, you have experience with this with Matt Chapman, right? You got Matt Chapman and Blake Snell. But then also, the money should allow you to do more. And I think that signing Matt Chapman and having that kind of star you can build around and you can market around gives you the flexibility to not have to sign one of the top names on the market and instead be able to do the smart signings to fill out your roster with some more experience, so you're not starting, what is this, 5-6 players under the age of 26?
Right. Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that.
All right, jumping into quick pitch real quick. We've got a little bit of rapid fire stuff here. Interesting report, the Cubs, who did not have to use a ton of starters last year, the Cubs are looking at adding to their rotation. I've heard a lot of people say that they want Max Fried to go there. Do you think that the Cubs should be prioritizing the rotation when you think about the fact they had 5 different starters all make 24 more starts last year? Or is this something where really they should be prioritizing offensive upgrades over the rotation?
I think their rotation could use an improvement. They did have the starting pitchers show up and have the depth there and the availability, but it could use an improvement. I don't know if a top of the line guy is really what they need, but maybe somebody closer to the middle or back end of the rotation. I don't think Kyle Hendricks was the answer, but
now gone, and he had, right. It is worth pointing out, he had 24 starts last year for them. Now, granted, they weren't great. ERA was almost 6, but he did. Right. That is 130 innings you have to replace.
Right. And so maybe somebody in their organization can improve that. But I think that they do need to focus more on improving the offense than improving the pitching staff.
Yeah. And I do think that some of this comes down to not having a ton of flexibility with your position player group, because so many of these guys are going to be very hard to improve on. Like Ian Happ in left field, 3 straight gold gloves. You know, he hit 243, 25 homers. Like, you're not improving off of him. Center field, Pete Crow Armstrong, young player. Took a while to get his feet underneath him, but looked really good down the stretch. He should be better. I've got Cody Bellinger in right field as of now with Seiya Suzuki as your DH. Both those guys are – Bellinger opted in. Both those guys are signed. First base, Michael Bush. Second base, Nico Horner. Dansby's not leaving short. Third base is Isak Paredes. You have a couple of years of team control on. Like, it's hard to see outside of catcher where you can find obvious improvements for a lot of these guys in free agency. And so I guess really you're banking on some of these guys kind of naturally improving, right? Can you get Pete Crow Armstrong to have a full season of production? Can you get a full season out of Isak Paredes after the trade at the deadline? Can you figure out something at catcher, right? Miguel Amaya has been rough offensively. I think he batted 230 last year, 300-something plate appearances, had like 8 home runs, a slugging of like 357, and on base under 300. Like, you're not getting the production you need from catcher.
Right.
But outside of that, it just feels like so many of these guys are locked into starting jobs that I guess it makes sense. Bullpen rotation. I probably would do more for the bullpen, I think, simply because while the Cubs were lucky to not need a ton of starters last year, 11 guys started games. Three of those guys only started one as a opener kind of thing. So you only really used 8 true starters last year. Jordan Wicks, Ben Brown, Hayden Wineski were the other 3. I feel like you probably need to have better starting rotation depth, but it does feel like the bullpen might be a bigger question mark than the rotation. But I guess this is one of those things where it's like a Braves problem. It's so hard to find spots on the diamond for a guy. You have to upgrade in other ways. And in this case, the rotation and the pitching staff as a whole is probably going to be the way they do it.
Yeah, no, you definitely make some good points there. And yeah, all those guys are pretty well locked in. I like the idea of Bellinger in right field. I think that his defense over there, with how good he's been at center field, his defense in right field would be a massive boon. They would have probably the best defensive outfield in baseball.
You'd have a center fielder in right. You have one of the best defensive center fielders I've ever seen in person, especially in the minors, and Pete Crow Armstrong in center. And then you have a 3-time Gold Glover, a reigning 3-time Gold Glover in left. It's probably the best outfield defense in baseball, left or right. Yeah.
Yeah. And if Michael Bush and Pete Crow Armstrong can take another step forward in their development at the plate, then really, yeah, offensively, they are really set. So, yeah, maybe they go after a guy like Carlos Estevez or Jeff Hoffman for their bullpen and improve in that way.
More coming on Jeff Hoffman a little bit later. Looking at another team that is, I'm not going to say completely locked in the position player group, but has a lot of guys who you expect to stick around, the Boston Red Sox. They're in a position, obviously disappointing year in 2024. A new report that came out from the GM meetings are that there's a widespread sense that the Sox can trade for nearly anyone. This feels like they have a lot of pieces, young players that are up at the major league level that are making virtually nothing. Tristan Casas is in his first year. Jaron Duran's his second year of service time, things like that. But your rotation is taking some hits here, right? Nick Pivetta is a free agent. They gave him a qualifying offer, which was a little bit surprising. I think he probably should take it.
Oh, yeah.
Go from $7.5 million to almost 22 and still hit free agency at age 32. Feels like you might want to take that.
Yep.
But it's just they need a lot of pitching depth, right? Your bullpen, they got a lot of guys who are potentially leaving. I think they're losing Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin, Lucas Sims, Luis Garcia, like a whole handful of guys there. And then your rotation is Tanner Houck, Brian Bello, Cutter Crawford, and then a bunch of young guys, Richard Fitz, Cooper Criswell, things like that. Do you see the Red Sox actually pulling off some trades of prospects to get impact players? And it's probably pitching, if so, right?
Yeah. They have 3 of the top prospects in the sport in Roman Anthony, and the shortstop prospect, I cannot recall his name right now.
Marcelo Meyer. In the MLB pipeline top 10, sorry to cut you off, they have 3 of the top 10. Yeah, they have Roman Anthony at 3, Marcelo Meyer at 7, and then Christian Campbell, who's both an infielder and an outfielder, they have him at 10. So they have 3 guys. All 3 of those guys finished the season at AAA.
Yeah. And Kyle Teal, the catching prospect, I think he started the year in the top 10. He fell out. He had a little bit of trouble on offense. I learned a lot about the Red Sox at our previous place of employment, but yeah.
he is number 25 on the MLB pipeline, top 100 prospects. So he is still a top 25. And then they have outfielder Braden Montgomery, who was a draftee last year at 54. And the sixth one is, I should know this off the top of my head, but I just can't. Shortstop Franklin Arias in single A.
Okay. So there you go. Yeah, they really have a lot of prospect pieces that they can move. I think that some of them they probably should maybe move Kyle Teal if before he potentially falls off anymore. But they definitely have to do something to upgrade their pitching staff, because right now, what, Nick Pivetta is their ace. and that's not a great look. I've had experience with Nick Pivetta, and he's not bad, but he's definitely not an ace. He's more of a fifth hole guy. But Cutter Crawford, he fell off this year. So, you know, they expect him to come back, I'm sure, and have another season like he had in the past. But in case that doesn't happen, they definitely do need to do something to improve their rotation.
Yeah, and kind of looking at a lot of their young players that are locked in are outfielders, right? Jaron Duran projected in left. Willier Abreu, first year in right. Zidane Raffaella, less than 1 year of service time in center. Masataka Yoshida's, you know, obviously was signed internationally, but he's your DH. So a lot of your young stuff is there. I could see them maybe trading a major league outfielder to try to make room for either Roman Anthony or Christian Campbell or both. Second base has been an obvious issue for this team. They used David Hamilton. They used Vaughn Grissom. Like, I disagree on Teal. I think they need to keep Teal. I think he struggled a little bit early, but kind of came on. And there's some explanations there for why he didn't perform as well as he could have. I still think he's a quality major leaguer. But I do think I agree that there's – if you don't see – if you don't see Marcelo Meyer overtaking Trevor Story at short, which I do think there are some questions in the industry about his defense. If you don't see him overtaking Trevor Story, then he's the guy you move, just given that there's so much need for shortstops in baseball. I do think if you bring him up, that's perfectly fine. Story goes to second, which a lot of guys, position players after Tommy John, they typically move to less demanding positions.
Right.
If you move him to second, you've taken care of that second base issue, and now you have options as far as, do you maybe trade David Hamilton? Do you trade Vaughn Grissom again? Do you move some of these other pieces around? So I do think you got a lot of flexibility here, but it does feel like you got to upgrade the rotation somehow. And you've just shed so many pitchers recently, whether it was trading Chris Sale away because you didn't think he was going to work out, you know, letting, you know, James Paxton leaving, Nick Pivetta potentially leaving, just all these different guys that, you know, you've got to do something here. And it feels like a trade is going to have to be the way it is. A team that is not looking at doing something to get rid of a guy, the Detroit Tigers, reportedly working on an extension with Tarik Skubal. He's a Scott Boras client. Do you think he actually signs an extension, or does he do 2 years of arbitration and go to free agency? Because last year, first year ARB eligible, $2.65 million. He'll get a significant pay raise, but nothing like what he would be valued on the open market. Do you think Detroit's able to get this signing done, or does he make it to free agency in two seasons?
No, I think he goes through arbitration, because I feel like whatever deal they do try to give him is going to be less with what he did this year and when he came back from injury in 2023. I think whatever deal they do try to give him is going to be less than he can get through arbitration and then in free agency in 2 years.
Yeah, and people point to the fact that Colt Keith signed an extension with the Tigers. I do want to point out Colt Keith, not rep by Scott Boras. He's a Matt Paul guy. I've heard nothing but good things about Matt Paul, but he's not Scott Boras. Right. And at a certain point, it is like, yes, Matt Chapman signed it. It is very rare that these Boras guys sign these early extensions. I just don't necessarily know if you will see Skubal get one. I do think it'd be great if they could, simply because I want these teams that are, I don't want to use small market and I don't want to use low revenue, but these typically less financially flush teams. Let's go with that, I guess. I want these teams to be able to keep their best players rather than these teams just always end up losing these players to your Yankees, your Dodgers, your Phillies, things like that. So I'd love for them to keep Tariq Skubal. We'll see what happens. Final note here, while I have the Phillies guy here, right-hander Jeff Hoffman has been pretty good for your Phillies the last couple of years as a reliever. But there's some buzz going around that teams could be interested in him as a starter. This is something where we've seen some high-profile successes in this. The Braves with Ronaldo Lopez, the White Sox with Garrett Crochet, Aaron Hicks of the Giants was not as significant, but still a success there. Do you think that Jeff Hoffman has what it takes to be a starter, or is the fact that he is seen as one of the top-tier relief options means that he should stick with that versus trying to be a starter?
I think he could do it as a starter. He's been a starter before. He wasn't as great then as he was as a reliever, but we have seen that that can definitely be the case of going back, like you said, with Reynaldo Lopez, Garrett Crochet, and I think that Jeff Hoffman is the guy that can do it, and he would definitely make a lot more money as a starter than he will as a reliever, even as a top-tier reliever like he is. And I think that if any team is going to be willing to take that chance, I think the Braves are the perfect team to go out and do that, especially with what they were able to do with transitioning Reynaldo Lopez from a reliever to a starter.
Yeah, that would be for some reason the Atlanta Braves just seem to – I mean, they've had other success outside of Lopez. You look at Grant Holmes, who they use late in the year as a starter. It looked really good. They're going to convert him in the offseason. Even prospects, they drafted all SEC closer Blake Burkhalter out of Auburn in 2023. And he's one of their top, like he pitched a complete game in the minors last year after coming back from Tommy John. Like,
wow,
he's becoming a significant starting pitcher prospect. So they've got a lot of guys that they've been able to succeed with this, and Hoffman being a guy that throws four pitches, right? He's got slider, four seam, splitter, sinker. So, you know, he's not using all his directions, right? He doesn't have anything that really breaks a lot vertically. I do think he'd be a candidate maybe to give him a curveball or something like that. But used to be a starter in the past, definitely something where you legitimately could see a team do it. And I think simply that's just one of those hedges off of how hard it is to find affordable starting pitching in Major League Baseball. And even if he doesn't work out like that, the fallback is he'd be a great reliever. Look at AJ Puck. He did not work at all as a starter. He was a pretty good reliever for the Marlins and then the Diamondbacks when he got traded. So I do think there is some legs here and would be interesting to see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I absolutely agree.
We'll be back tomorrow with more. In the meantime, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Also, leave that 5-star review. Helps folks discover the show. And either way, tell your friends they can go to firstpitchpodcast.com to learn more about what's going on in Major League Baseball. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.